Man, let's do this. It's hump day, and literally everything is going on. Everything, everywhere. It's football season. We're at alert level, whatever that is, when things actually start to happen. We're at DEFCON 5, any like disaster readiness that you could be on level from any 80s movie about like a computer starting wars or anything like that. We are there right now. Any level of alert in a James Bond movie, wherever it is, we're there. And it just... keep the James Bond reference going for the people who are watching on Zone TV. I have this crappy alarm clock that sits right next to me every day while I do the show. So I turn this radio on so I know, like, okay, Buck is off. It's time to zoom in and say hey to Lucas and the Hitman. Well, every time I touch this thing, I turn on some kind of alarm. Every time. So at like 2:43 in the morning, some alarm goes off. My wife's like, really? Again? You touched this thing? So I had this clock doing all sorts of stuff. I may have disarmed it, though, right as we were coming on. It was like Bond, where there's a countdown of time, and he's trying to figure out, do I cut the blue wire or the red wire? You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah,
I think I cut the right wire. That's a good start. 103, no alarms. All the extra lights are off on this thing except for 104 p.m. Literally, it's 104. Yeah. I just need 104.5, and I'm ready to go.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I'm sure through your days of, making nice little toys as well as hijacking cars and everything else, man. So I'm sure you know about all the blue and the red wire.
Can I just say this? There's something wrong with me. And okay, well, everybody says, yes, we know that. And you know that.
That's not true.
I know the show is going well. I've always said this. I knew the show was going well if at some point you said you were so stupid, because that meant that you were laughing at something I said. So if you ever said, you're so stupid, I knew. Okay, that was a good show. Blaine told me I was stupid.
I said that.
You would tell me that. So I always knew I was onto something if you would laugh and tell me that I was so stupid, because I knew that was a compliment. So I loved it.
Right.
But you know, like, your son's older now, but I got a 6-year-old.
Yeah.
When you buy the toy that you have to put together.
Oh.
I don't know why, but I love that. Oh, I love it.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Yeah, the Lego, we went through a whole Lego thing. I had to just step on all of them to get rid of them. I mean, I'm talking about big ones like airplanes that you takes you days to put together or half of a day. Yeah, man, I got all in on all of that. I really love that stuff, too. And it takes you back because, you know, the Legos weren't the same Legos. They were the big old blocks when we were growing up. So
right. You could build a house when we had Legos. Now yeah. You can build an airplane or the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah, so that is pretty cool. And it's actually kind of a bonding time too, you know, with your kids to spend some time with them, because they're gonna, you know, at that age, they're gonna, you know, reach points where, oh dang, I'm stuck, you know, to help them get past and how to figure things out and stuff like that. So yeah, that, you know, it takes you and keeps you young, man. So yeah, I always say that. You're like, oh man, I'm gonna be old when I graduate. Hey man, as long as you're still looking young and feeling young, you will be young.
Well, if he doesn't kill me. But I even like the stuff, like it comes in a box and it's a bicycle or a wagon, yeah, or whatever. Uh-huh. And you got to put it, I don't know what it is, but I like the challenge of that.
Yeah, I did too. Sometimes I had to get sex, so then I had to bring, you know, cum laude in from Bambi to help us out. Yeah, my wife. Yeah. So I was like, dang, man, I don't know. Maybe we have a piece missing.
Of course,
you have a piece missing, so I would put a piece in my pocket just in case I needed that for my ammo to not, you know, move forward on the puzzle.
we bought my son one of those things where it's a pitching net where you throw it and it bounces back to you.
Oh, is yeah, for baseball. Yeah,
that's yes. Cool. And then on the other side, I had a target, and he likes to pitch, so you can throw. It's got a strike where you can throw to this target. That thing had the worst directions I've ever seen. They were stick drawings on one sheet of paper.
Oh.
Just stick drawings. It didn't even tell you, like, how many of these net clips go here. None
yeah.
of it.
Yeah.
So I Googled that particular thing, and I found all these pictures of it and printed them, and I just built it to look like the pictures.
Uh-huh.
And so I posted, you know, Christmas gift. We're out here throwing. And three different parents sent me a message, like a DM on Facebook, and said, how in the world did you put that thing together? Yeah. Ours is still in the box.
Yeah. 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 I think I know exactly what you're talking about. So I had the old master of disaster come out there and help us, the wife. She's more handsy than I am as far as, you know, figuring out something. Yeah. I'll be like, I can't get this. The next thing you know, I had the whole garage in a net. Batting practice in the garage, had the net there all on the side, bat practice and all, man. Like, we don't need to go to a facility. We got it right here, man. It comes I remember, right here. I don't even need to be out here.
I remember you telling me you had turned your garage into a batting cage at one point.
Yeah, the one car garage definitely it was that.
So, Shane, cousin Shane O'Matic was nice enough to tell me, hey, Mickey, DEFCON 5 means there's no threat. DEFCON 1 means the highest alert. So we're at DEFCON 1. Anyway, the Titans at practice, people with two vaccines and 2 weeks in between were out there. The media, they got to see it. Mike Vrabel spoke, and John Robinson basically came up for practice and said they're 90% vaccinated. Old Vrabel wouldn't give a number yesterday, but John Robinson said 90% yesterday. So that was a big story for people who are monitoring all that stuff. And Ryan Tannehill, he had a mask on for part of the practice, which John Robinson had said there's basically like four places that people are. They're not vaccinated. They haven't been vaccinated. People who have been and are waiting for their 2 weeks to pass, or like waiting on their second shot. So there are kind of four different categories. So then Ryan Tannehill came out. He had a mask on during the part of practice where they said during part of practice, you'll have to wear a mask. And he was wearing one. So he got asked about it afterwards. Lucas, I think we've got this audio. And people are going to take a side on wearing the mask or not. But here's the interesting thing about this to me, Blaine. You and I talked about this, and you asked the question. I just wonder, okay, and I think I'd brought it up too. If you don't have the shot, do you have to go to meetings by yourself? Do you have to eat lunch by yourself? How does all that work? And he actually laid all that out. And then he said, I'm in the process of getting fully vaccinated, and essentially said, I had to. But Lucas, if you got this audio, this was Ryan Tannehill, but he talks about if you're not vaccinated, this is your life. Just wait for that part. It's interesting.
Like I said, you know, I wouldn't have gotten the vaccine if not for really intensive protocols and, you know, not being able to gather with teammates and, you know, separate locker room, separate meeting room, separate cafeteria, all those type of things where you're losing, you know, the team chemistry, the team bond, which I think is so important. I think that probably had a lot to do with guys ultimately getting vaccinated.
Okay, there is more to it. And he went on to say, Lucas, if you could find that, there's a long bite. He talked about, I guess, a couple of different times. And he talked about not having access to your teammates, not having access for mealtime, all these different things. And he said all the stuff we wondered about. Okay, are you kind of isolated from other people? And he essentially said, that's the deal. So hopefully Lucas can find that, or I'll find a transcript of it. We'll get a transcript at some point. But
I remember when they came out with the rules, Mickey. I mean, I thought that they almost were, you know, they might as well pun the, you know, statement. I mean, they put a gun in your head because they're going to make it so difficult, as we were saying, that you're going to be like, I'm just getting it. I'm just getting a shot, man. If you were part of the side that says I'm not, you know, I'd be interested why Tannehill had chosen not to get the shot until he got the shot. What was his thought process behind it all, not get the shot until right before camp? You know, because the whole question is, well, dang, man, you had plenty of time to get the shot. So did you feel like you were forced to get the shot? Because if not, this team couldn't really function correctly, and you didn't like the way it was all set up, because you would then be alienated from your own teammates to a certain extent until you're on the football field. I would want to know that more so. And I don't know if that's more of a personal question that they don't have to answer. I know I was reading some of Graziano's, I think that's who tweeted it out, about the misconception of that, you know, players don't have to answer the question of if they've gotten vaccinated. That is a legitimate question by a media member. It's just that they can't pass along that information until you answer the question. So actually, they can't ask that question. I thought they couldn't ask, like, more, you know, on the personal side of any decision. It's really kind of interesting. I mean, like, well, then they could just ask, well, is your family vaccinated? I mean, could they ask questions like that? Wow. Right. To me, it should be all about football and anything related to football. And I think in this case, getting vaccinated is part of this process here to play football now. But anything more on the personal level of your family and everything else, I didn't know they could ask those things.
And I guess you can ask it, and the player could always say, "Hey man, let's talk about the offense today," or
right,
"Hey
you don't
man,
have let's to answer right."
Let's talk about something else. I don't want to talk about that. John Glennon is going to join us next from Broadway Sports. Here's a couple of tweets from him about Ryan Tannehill. Him quote tweeting as Ryan Tannehill spoke, and again, we can ask him about this in 5 minutes when he joins us. Tannehill, "I would not have gotten the vaccine if it hadn't been for all the NFL protocols." He said the league is trying to force players' hands and has done so. So it goes back to what you said, like, okay, your life is going to be miserable if you don't get this. Basically, that's what Ryan Tannehill said. He said he started to explain why he wouldn't have gotten vaccinated, but then he hesitated, smiled, and said, "I think I'll pass on that." Oh. So he got right to the edge of saying it. And then he
said,
"Nope, I'm going to pass on that. Not going to do it. Not going to do it."
Oh, you don't know who asked that question, though. That is a fascinating. You know, and reason why it's fascinating to me, it's because you're a quarterback, and there's an assumption that he's not, if not the smartest, is one of the smartest players on the team. So you say, okay, that also leads to hopefully off the field decisions in anything that he does. Mm-hmm. And so you say, why are you not getting a shot? I'm sure this is discussions going on in the locker room amongst his teammates of why he got to the point where he hadn't gotten it yet. You know, so those are, you know, because everybody wants to feel like they're totally informed. And what did you find out that maybe I didn't, to make you kind of pause and wait to get the shot? To be honest, my whole thought process on and on being a media member wasn't for necessarily the media. I wanted the onslaught of everybody else getting the shot first. I always be last to the party. Mm-hmm. And see how that all works. I thought it was interesting. My wife is in healthcare. And, you know, all the doctors and people, caregiver, you know, everybody who was part of the process of being in the doctor industry and nurses were getting the shot first. I go, well, what if the shot doesn't work? Then all our doctors and nurses are screwed. Yeah. So I was like, I'll just hold off just a little bit. And, you know, meanwhile, my wife has got shot. I said, no, I'm getting it, you know, but I'm going to hold off, you know, wait till the, you know, the herd gets done at first to see what happens. What are the ramifications? And then I'll be more than willing to get a shot, because I'd rather live than, you know what, no longer be doing the Blaine and Mickey show.
Yeah, we can't Zoom to heaven, man. Our phone line's not that long. We couldn't call you in from there every day. So
unless we're there together, you know, we'll still be
together. Well, the way things are going, we may wind up there together, my friends. We'll have to see. All right. Maybe John Glennon will join us there. I don't know, but he will join us live on the radio next. John Glennon from Broadway Sports with a complete wrap-up of day one for Titans practice. Blaine and Mickey, 104.5 The Zone. Apparently my ears aren't working today. I asked Lucas to play something. He played it, and I said, there's something I didn't hear. Well, apparently my ears blinked, and I missed the part that was supposed to be on there, that was on there, that Lucas played. Then I said, I didn't hear that part. Well, apparently my ears need to be cleaned, because that part was said by Ryan Tannehill. He mentioned all the things he couldn't do with his teammates if he wasn't vaccinated.
I have the reason why you didn't hear, Mickey. Okay. You had one of your headphones out, and if you don't have both of them in, you can't hear the whole entirety of what was said.
That has to be it. Thank you, Blaine. Thank you, teammate, for having my back. I don't know why.
Always got your back, man. Yeah,
I know you do. We got John Glennon's back, and he's fully vaccinated, and he got to go to Titans practice and talk to people and players and coaches, and got some vaccination news from J-Rob to start things off. Yeah. John, first of all, is it hot enough for you? We'll start with a rhetorical question. And B, how about John Robinson starting the day with a hard number of 90% vaccination?
Yeah. Well, 90 is a good number because, we were pretty close to 90 as we rolled out there, 90 degrees this morning. I'm thankful that, you know, the Titans are getting started as early in the day as they are. Almost every practice, I think, is going to be at 9:30. So, you know, we were only in the mid to upper 80s as opposed to what it might be later today. You know, in years past, they've been a little bit later than this. So, thank goodness for small time changes, at least. But John Robinson certainly started the day out with a big announcement there. You know, everybody's been kind of looking for that number, that percentage for vaccinations for the Titans. And basically, he said it's 90%. Now, that doesn't mean 90% of the team is completely vaccinated, but it means that at least 90% have at least started the process. They've all at least 90% have at least gotten the one shot. So a good number, certainly, for the Titans. You know, I think the NFL has made a big deal about trying to reach at least 85%. That speaks well of how the Titans have performed in that department. And that just means things run a lot smoother, a lot easier, whether you're on the field, whether you're in the facility, even when you're in the community, because the restrictions, the COVID-19 restrictions and protocols that the NFL has put down are so severe that it really limits and constricts what unvaccinated players can do. And ultimately, you know, I think that's what has changed a lot of players' minds. Ryan Tannehill got up there and said that today. He had no intention of getting vaccinated, but just came to realize that these restrictions are so severe that it's going to put such a crimp on team bonding, on team chemistry, on communication, that, you know, he finally decided, okay, I'm going to jump in and literally roll up my sleeve here.
John Glennon joins us. He does his bonding with and his communication from Broadway Sports. There you go. He joins us on Blaine and Mickey.
Yes, JG, man. Thanks for coming on. You know, I'm sure they'll be providing you guys nice showers and, you know, change clothes and everything out there with the time.
I just got out of the cold tub, as a matter of fact, Blaine. Yeah.
Yeah,
that was interesting. Well, I mean, I don't know if it was you or someone else that asked the question, but Tannehill almost told us, right, that the reason why he hadn't gotten the shot yet?
He came very, very close. Because, I, you know, I was just curious. I did ask that question, yeah. You know, because, it, I mean, ultimately it is a personal decision, you know, and everyone has their reasons for or against. So I was just kind of curious because Ryan Tannehill, as I said earlier, had made the decision he was not going to get that vaccine, you know, unless it was all the NFL protocols. So I asked, you know, why would you not have gotten the vaccine? You know, what was the deciding factor? And he started down that road on why he was against the vaccine. And then he kind of paused and he sort of smiled and I said, you know, I think I'm going to pass. I don't think I'm going to go there. And I can understand that. There's a lot of strong opinions on both sides of that. And, you know, once you put kind of one toe in the water, you know, you're going to have people all over both sides arguing. So he stopped short of giving a reason as to why he would not be vaccinated had it not been for the NFL protocols. But bottom line, he has done it. You know, he's still wearing a mask, as are some other players when they go out and stretch. That's for a lot of these guys, that only shows that they're in the process of the vaccination, not that they have not been vaccinated. So guys like he, Roger Saffold, Christian Fulton, and some other players, you know, were wearing masks during stretch, but in time, those masks will come off.
No doubt. I'm sure the guys will be elated when the vaccine questions are done with. I'm sure, just like the media is tired of asking about it until it's over with. Yeah. But I'm sure Mickey's going to ask you about the offense, and they get always, you know, the credit for everything else. Anyway. So I'll ask you about the defense. From what you saw, did you see anything of noteworthy or maybe that you put out there on Twitterverse and to let everybody know who, you know, can't go to practice and, mm-hmm. and check it out? Kind of. What was observation of the first practice? First, let's start with energy. Yeah. How much energy was out there? Because I know that first day, man, I'd be jacked up, and I feel like I could run for days.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I think there was plenty of energy out there. You know, this is a team that, you know, finished the regular season at least well yesterday. You know, or last year, the playoffs obviously did not go as what they hoped for. But you know, there's a lot of expectations here. This is a talented team. There's some new faces. So I think there was, you know, a lot of energy coming into the day. It may have faded a bit as soon as those temperatures kicked in. But, yeah, it was, you know, it was good to see some things like, you know, Julio Jones out there. You know, he didn't do everything, which is to be expected. You know, he's still coming back from injury. But, you know, just to see him kind of side by side with A.J. Brown in drills, you know, just seeing those two guys come at you and realizing that kind of the weapons, the offense that this Titans team is going to have, you know, I think that's a little bit exciting right there. You know, we saw Darrington Evans get a lot of carries today because Derrick Henry, you know, as is often the case, you know, didn't take part in a ton of the team drills. He worked in the sand pit quite a bit. You know, they're always trying to kind of monitor Derrick Henry's workload, and that goes for training camp as well as the regular season. You know, the defense, I thought that, you know, there were a couple of good plays, you know, some interceptions we saw. Amani Hooker, who jumped into the scene last year with I think, four interceptions, you know, had a pick today off of Ryan Tannehill, who was throwing to Cody Hollister, made a nice pick there. And then a little bit later, Breon Borders made a nice diving pick off of Deshaun Kizer in the red zone. Breon Borders, you know, one of those guys who's a depth corner. You know, there's a lot of competition there, but I think he's making a pretty strong statement for himself. And then in terms of pass breakups, you know, Elijah Molden had a few, and certainly that's a very encouraging sign for a rookie and B, a guy who will probably, you know, be the Titan slot cornerback, I would guess, at this point. And Kevin Byard had a couple of nice PBUs also. And again, that's an encouraging sign because, you know, I think Kevin Byard has acknowledged himself that, you know, last year wasn't the best that we've seen from Kevin Byard. And I'm sure he'd like to get back on the level that we've seen him in previous years.
Well, I guess this was secondary. One more question to that point is, how was Christian Fulton looking out there, considering that you know, he got a late jump on the season with no OTAs and then injuries and the like? So how did he look?
Yeah, I thought he had a good, you know, solid day. You know, nothing, no particular standout plays, but on the other hand, you know, he wasn't toasted or anything like that we saw. You know, and I should also, you know, point out about Fulton that, you know, Mike Vrabel yesterday kind of singled him and a couple guys out, like Anthony Firkser and Tierre Tart. You know, he said Christian Fulton was a guy who really made strides during the offseason physically and really looks like a different person than he did a year ago. And as we know about Mike Vrabel, he doesn't single out players very often, and he wasn't asked about Fulton in particular. But still brought up his name. So I think that's a big plus, a big check mark for Christian Fulton as he gets ready for a very important second season. You know, he played so little that rookie year due to injuries and due to COVID and you know, the lack of offseason that he had. So this is a big year for him. You know, you still got to make it a big leap in year two.
No doubt. Well, with John Glennon, Sports and Broadway Sports.
No doubt. Glennon, it's funny. Blaine was telling me I was going to ask about offense. I had a bunch of defensive questions. I've learned from the hitman, you got to ask about the defense too. You know, people like those one-on-ones when the receivers make all the catches. I know today's, it looked like, Glennon, from all the reports, it looked like today's shorts and t-shirt superstar was Racy McMath, who's the guy we're not talking about too much. Big guy, maybe a project, more of a special teamer, but boy, there was a lot of ink being written and tweeted about him today.
Yeah, you know, I think in some ways he is probably a bit of a project. You know, he's a guy who didn't play a ton at LSU, you know, just been, for one reason. They had, so many good wide receivers down there. He was kind of stuck behind a lot of people, but the physical tools, you know, big guy, fast guy, physical, you know, just hasn't really got much of a chance. And he did make some nice plays out there today, I think. And, you know, Mike Vrabel was asked about him afterwards and pointed out that, yeah, he is an imposing figure out there. And that certainly, if nothing else, you know, should be a big special teamer for the Titans, because he really fits the mold of a guy who can get down the field, you know, not afraid to throw his body around, you know, as I say, a physical guy. So I think they're excited about him. You know, my initial thought with Racy McMath is that maybe he's a practice squad guy, you know, because he's kind of raw. You know, maybe he's the kind of guy you slide onto the practice squad, you know, hone his skills for a year, and then next year is his year. But I don't know. You know, again, this is one day. But, you know, based on one day, maybe he's, a guy that really winds up on the 53 as opposed to a practice squad.
You were mentioning a couple of those guys from last year, and Blaine brought up Christian Fulton, and you brought up Darrington Evans. Vrabel brought up Laurel Murchison today, one of the offseason award winners for the team. Chris Jackson is maybe the other guy that we'll watch from last year's draft class. But what that class, they've had a full offseason. Then they had a full offseason on the field. Now they're going to get a full training camp and sort of a normal experience. You know, JG, those guys really need to do some stuff this year, all of them. Merchison's going to have to perform on an undermanned defensive line. They just had Avery Jones retire. I know they signed a couple more guys, but they need him to play well. And Darrington Evans could very well figure into the return game as well as being a weapon on offense.
Yeah, I think there's a very good chance he may wind up as the Titan kickoff returner, you know, with that kind of speed and with the success he had as a returner, kick returner in college. I want to say he had three or four kick returns for touchdowns at Appalachian State. So, yeah, that's a real possibility. But, yeah, the Titans' 2020 draft class, you know, to say disappointing last year would be an understatement. We all know the Isaiah Wilson debacle at this point, you know, a total of four snaps for the first-round draft pick. You know, you look at a quarterback who you cut a few days into camp in Cole McDonald. And you know, two of the guys that were going to be counted on heavily, Evans and Fulton, didn't play very much. You know, again, whether it was through injury or whether it was because of COVID or whether, you know, it was because of that lack of off-season, we did not see much production at all from the 2020 class. I think they had fewer snaps or fewer games played as a rookie class than any other team in the league. Now, some of that you may say, okay, well, the Titans' depth chart is pretty good because they had a good team even without the impact of these rookies. But at the same time, they're going to need more sooner rather than later from these guys. And, you know, I think Evans may be getting a little push this year, you know, from a guy like a Brian Hill, for instance. Yeah. You know, the free agent they signed from Atlanta. You know, this is another guy who is a pretty decent runner, can certainly catch passes out of the backfield. You know, so I think, you know, I don't think anybody's thinking that at this point that Brian Hill is going to take Darrington Evans' spot, but he can do some similar things. So, you know, I think that's going to push Darrington Evans just a little bit more. And as I say, every time I looked up today, it seemed that he was the guy getting the ball, you know, on carries because Derrick Henry was really working out in the sand for much of the day.
Good stuff, man. John Glennon at Glennon Sports with Broadway Sports joining us now.
Mm-hmm. Yes, JG. Man, I want to go back down into the trenches. You know, I know LaJuan was back out there. I guess talk a little bit about what you saw, how he was moving around, as well as the draft pick on his Raiders. How was he looking?
Mm-hmm.
And we all know, so goes King, so goes that offensive line.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, I think it was encouraging, first off, for, you know, for LaJuan health-wise. You know, he was out there right away. He was, you know, taking part in everything. And then, you know, after individual drills, he walked off the field to the locker room. And, you know, I just kind of assumed, like, that might be it for LaJuan. You know, he's still rehabbing. You know, you work him back in slowly. But actually, no, he came back not too long after going to the locker room, and he was fully involved again in practice drills. So encouraging sign that he, you know, appears, you know, as if he's very much on track, recovering from that torn ACL. Looked in good shape to me out there. Raiden's, you know, it's hard to tell, you know, yeah, for in the trenches until we see guys, you know, with helmets and pads on and so forth. But I think, you know, probably if you're looking for encouraging things about Raiden's, what I would say is that everything we hear about Raiden's, you almost immediately compare to what was said or not said about Isaiah Wilson last year at the same mm-hmm. position. You know, and you hear the things about Raiden that, you know, he's learning, he's listening, he's got a great attitude. You know, he's a guy that came early, that he's really soaking up things from LaJuan and Saffold and so forth. And you just can't really help but compare, you know, as I say, the things that weren't being said last year about Isaiah Wilson. And there was no way anybody could say anything great about Wilson because it was such a disaster almost from day one. So, you know, I think Raiden's is off to a good start from that standpoint. I would guess that, you know, still Kendall Lamb at this point, one day into camp, you would have to assume he has a bit of an edge, you know, as far as maybe that starting right tackle goes. But we've got a long way to go in camp and you know, through the preseason games as well.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I know there's some guys that's injured and not practicing, but did we get to see any of those guys that's on PUP or something out there doing some drills or anything, or did you not see any of those guys?
Well, that's an interesting question, Blaine, always, because – They talk about field three, where the injured guys go to rehab and to work out. And we as media are basically told that we don't we certainly can't report on what's happening there. So basically, we have to act like nothing is going on field three.
Even if
we see with our own two eyes, people are doing some drills and some workouts. It's basically, Mike Vrabel is very, very touchy about what's reported in terms of guys coming around from injury. So I'll go to the great extent of saying that there were people on field three. That's probably about as far as I can go without getting a wrist slap.
This is the reason why I don't go to practice, and actually I got the memo and I didn't get all the way down to that part.
There's going to be a drone outside John's house this afternoon.
It's pretty
interesting, and I know that I overheard Buck on the radio earlier saying something similar. He's got his live set up there this week, and he is directly in front of field three where these players may or may not be, so he has to ignore basically anything that's going on directly in front of him.
That would be really hard for me to do during radio. Say, oh man, yeah, Marcus Mariota looks really good over here rehabbing. You can't say that.
Most coaches in general are certainly very touchy about injury, but I would say Mike Vrabel takes it to another level. Certainly in the past, we could at least say, player X, was working out on a side field and then, was doing sprints or things like that. But this administration, I guess, is a little stricter than most in that regard. So we act like there is no field three for the most part.
Well, I'll ask you a question that you can answer then. And this is based off of paper. So that same memo you read about where you couldn't talk about the injured players, I want you to read the other side of it where it had all the players listed. And based off of just the roster, is this the best roster in Titans history?
I think certainly I feel that, I would have to go back and research. But off the top of my head, I would have a tough time thinking of a better offensive roster. I think that's almost a given. Despite the fact they lose Jonnu Smith, I think the addition of Julio Jones, there's so many impressive offensive weapons on a team that averaged, over 30 a game last year. So certainly that side of the ball is the best ever. I still think question marks have to be answered on defense, and a lot of that is health. When do we see Dupree? When do we see Farley? How much are they going to be able to produce, early in the year? And the chemistry question, there are a lot of new faces on defense, a lot of new faces, especially in the secondary. So I think it has the potential overall as a team to certainly be the most talented roster, but I still think, I still think there are questions that have to be answered about the defense. I do think it's a more talented defense than last year. Now that's, you can obviously say that's a low bar because the defense certainly was pretty poor last year. But I think the personnel is better. It's just a question of, as I say, chemistry and when key guys will be completely healthy and able to produce at a high level.
Oh,
JG, thank you, man. At Glennon Sports, Broadway Sports as well, for all the latest with the Titans and the Predators and more. Thank you, my friend.
Okay, thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Thanks, JG.
All right, we'll let him hit the cool showers with a tall, cold Gatorade. When we come back, there's lots going on with Kamar Rocker. Let's get a Mets reporter on. We'll do that next. Anthony DiComo of MLB.com on Blaine and Mickey. Blaine and Mickey, 104.5 The Zone. We're talking a lot of football, obviously, with NFL teams reported and all this going on, including the Tennessee Titans. But let's go to the Big Apple now. Let's talk to Anthony DiComo, Mets beat writer for MLB.com. Anthony, welcome to radio in Tennessee, buddy. And what in the world is the latest with the Mets and Kamar Rocker?
Yeah, it's they had a bit of a snag in their negotiations. Kamar Rocker having gone number 10 overall to the Mets in the draft a couple of weeks ago. and they considered that a coup. They were extremely surprised and happy to have gotten Kumar Rocker at number 10. They never really envisioned him falling to him. But now they're seeing maybe a little reason why he fell. It sounds like an elbow problem for Kumar Rocker. And people hear that, and I know the first reaction is, oh, my God, he's going to have Tommy John surgery. He's done. He's cooked. Whatever. And that's not necessarily the case. But they negotiated a $6 million deal on draft night. Maybe it's not $6 million anymore for him to sign. And he's represented by Scott Boras, who baseball fans know is, kind of that notorious baseball agent in terms of trying to get every last dollar for his clients, of driving the hardest bargains in the sport, in the game. So we'll see where this goes. The Mets still have a few days until the August 1st deadline to sign Kumar Rocker. There is definitely still an optimism within the front office that they can. I think the bigger question is Kumar Rocker going to get his full $6 million, or is he going to have to settle for less? And is he willing to settle for less, or would he just go back into the draft next year?
Anthony DeComo joining us here on Blaine and Mickey, Mets beat writer for MLB.com.
Anthony, Blaine here, man. Thanks for coming on. I guess there's a couple questions here on the Rocker deal. Did he know this issue was that he had this issue with his elbow, as well as did he get an MRI that revealed it to himself, or was it unknown to him, or is this more of a negotiating ploy by the New York Mets? Where do you go with this?
Yeah, I don't know the answer for a fact to that. I don't know if he knew exactly the nature of whatever's going on in his elbow. But it was known that there were perhaps some injury red flags with Kumar Rocker. Let's put it that way. I mean, this is a guy who heading into the year was, if not a consensus number one overall pick, he was at least on the short list of guys, along with Jack Leiter, who could potentially go number one overall in the draft. And then all of a sudden he went from throwing 98, 99 regularly in games there with Vanderbilt to sometimes throwing 91, 92, 93. And that's a pretty big red flag for a pitcher. Now, his velocity did tick back up towards the end of the year, and that gave the Mets enough confidence to take him number 10 overall. But if that velocity drop hadn't happened, I strongly suspect Kumar Rocker would not have lasted all the way to number 10 overall in the draft. This is a guy, again, who had potential to be number one overall and certainly top five, if not the top guy altogether. So did Kumar Rocker know 100% that there was something going on in his elbow? Did the Mets know 100% that there was something going on in his elbow? I would say probably not, but I do think there was almost certainly a realization that this is the type of thing that could happen for any team that did draft Kumar Rocker.
Well, with Anthony DeComo and Mets beat writer, MajorLeagueBaseball.com, I guess hearing that, I go, well, doesn't the velocity of a college pitcher typically go down? I remember Leiter had to stop pitching because he said his arm was tired, so because he was losing velocity. And then it kind of picks back up towards the final third of the season because they're getting adjusted to the actual season. I mean, for pitchers in general, or is that just a broad brush and really not really the case in most of the times?
The answer to that is it is a broad brush, but that also doesn't mean it's false. That is something that happens to a lot of college pitchers, especially coming off a pandemic season in 2020. Most of these guys barely pitched in real games. So to come back to have a full college workload, which is often heavier than these guys have in their introduction to pro ball, yeah, I think you can definitely expect for most pitchers some sort of dip in the middle of the season. I think the red flags are that, A, Kumar Rocker is not just any pitcher. He was a guy who, again, was potentially looked at as a number one overall pick. There are going to be more eyeballs on him. There are going to be more people dissecting every start and every mile per hour on that fastball of his. And B, it was a significant dip, and it didn't come all the way back. You're talking not just a couple miles an hour loss. You're talking almost 10 mile an hour loss on his fastball in midseason there for Vanderbilt. And he only really got it back up to maybe 95, 96 toward the end of the year. So that doesn't mean Kumar Rocker can't be an effective pitcher if that's who he is now. But a guy who tops out at 96 isn't a top 10 draft pick. A guy who tops out at 99 and can maintain that deep in the game, that is a top 10 draft pick and probably a steal at number 10 in the draft. So you're talking about a big difference there for Kumar Rocker, and if it is injury-related, certainly that would be a reason for the Mets to give pause and say, wait a second, maybe we don't want to give this guy $6 million. Maybe something like $3 or $4 million would make a little bit more sense.
Well, with Anthony DeComo, who's actually drag racing on air while we're talking, so that's pretty cool that you can do something like that. But I guess one more real quick, and that is, jokes aside, is have you seen something like this happen before? I'm sure in the Major League Baseball draft, and typically what happens when this does happen?
Yeah, you guys are getting the full experience of the New York City commute right here. But
love it.
Yes, this is something. This is something that has happened before. About 5 years ago, Brady Aiken was kind of in the same boat. He was a consensus number one pick. He went number one overall to the Astros. They did the post-draft physical, and the UCL in his elbow was abnormally sized. And the Astros said, whoa, 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 wait a minute. We're not going to give you the same type of deal. It was around $6 million. And the Astros said, wait a second. We're not going to give you that full bonus. And Brady Aiken said, okay, then I'm not signing. He went back in the draft. The Astros got a compensatory pick. The Indians wound up taking Brady Aiken. I believe it was number 14 overall the next year, and he's really struggled since then. He's never made it out of A-ball. So it's a little bit of a cautionary tale for both sides, I would say, and that's not to compare Kumar Rocker, the pitcher, and Kumar Rocker's medical issues to those of Brady Aiken. They're two different guys, two different things going on here. But it is the type of thing that can happen. If a team drafts a player, and that player, once he undergoes the MRI and goes through the physical and does, checks off all those boxes, if that's not who the team thought they were drafting, it's the type of thing that can blow up a deal. It has happened before. It's rare, but it does happen. It can happen. I don't think the Mets are at that point with Kumar Rocker. You know, if you're asking me if he'll still sign, I think there's a better than even chance that he will still be a New York Met when all is said and done. But again, it has opened the door for further negotiation. Whenever you do that, especially with an agent with the reputation of a Scott Boras, it does open up that door that potentially a deal would not get done.
Gotcha. Anthony, good stuff, and the fast driving and everything. So just to kind of tie a bow on this, because I was going to ask you on the way out, your gut feeling, you think something eventually gets done, they meet in the middle or they meet somewhere, Kumar Rocker remains a Met. Is that your gut feeling on this?
My gut is yes. And let's not forget that this is a player, regardless of all these issues, this is a player. This Mets organization is very, very excited about, never thought they would have a chance to draft. So it would take a lot for them to turn around now and say, no, we're not giving Kumar Rocker a deal. When push comes to shove, the Mets still very much want Kumar Rocker in their organization.
And that's great stuff. Be safe up there with these people. You know, we're talking about throwing 90. Sounds like people are driving 90 up there. Be safe, yeah, Anthony. Yeah. And we'll check in with you again soon as this continues to develop. Thank you.
Appreciate it, Anthony.
I appreciate you guys. Take care.
Thank you. Yes, sir. All you Vandy and Met fans, and I know there are Met fans here, at Anthony DeComo. That's where you can follow this guy on Twitter for all the latest as we continue to track what's going on with Kumar and the New York Mets. All right, hour number two coming up. Titans have reported. There's lots going on. Aaron Rodgers reported. Deshaun Watson went out in practice, and they made him, like, hold a practice dummy. There's lots going on. We'll get to all of it in hour two. It's Blaine and Mickey.